Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another show, another week, another fantastic Monday with Francesca Fiorentini. Francesca, how's it going?
Hey, John Iadarola, what is up? What is up? Is there anything sad in the news?
Yes. What if there wasn't? What would our day be like? We would enter the week all full of optimism and everything. But anyway,
we wouldn't get the clicks. We wouldn't get the gotta get the clicks. I don't know why I'm doing HW.
I don't know. Was he an influencer? Was he big on that? I think HW got it started at BuzzFeed. But anyway,
yeah, he did.
Very glad to have you back. Tell me about your weekend. Tell me about the Bituation Room. What was going on there?
Oh, we had Mr. Brett Ehrlich on the show, and he was great. We also discussed socialism in Peru. They've got a new president down there in Peru. Their first leftist president they've ever had. So we had a professor, Jose Ragas, on, and he explained what to look for, whether to be excited about it. I think a lot of Peruvians are, and a lot of Peruvians with the keys to all the money and power in that country are very much not excited about the new leftist president. So yeah, listen wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube at Franny Fio.
That's awesome. And I hear that they'll be able to listen to you like directly from your mouth to their ears soon. When's that happening?
Right, the little ear holes. Directly, yeah, safely and vaxxed, but at Portland, Oregon this Thursday, September 2nd, get your tickets. Oh my God.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we'll be live. We'll be talking about all the things, and I'm super excited for all the people, all the Dragon Squad. That is definitely showing up, John. Know that.
I hope so. That's very exciting. By the way, if you're watching on YouTube, the team has fixed the chat. You might have to refresh the page, but they jumped on that and got it fixed. So everybody can chat along, talk to each other. You can chat to us too if you want to. You can send us comments, tweets, super chat, stuff like that. We'll respond as we go. No, it wasn't like an intentional thing that the chat was disabled. There was some sort of problem that they fixed. So now it's good. But anyway, yeah, you can do that as we go through. We'll be taking short breaks or responding to what you have to say. But please hit the like button and share the stream before that. Through the course of the next 90 minutes, we're going to be talking about Afghanistan, how things are developing there. I think you know where this is going. We've got a tropical storm, and we've also got a storm of increasingly violent and aggressive anti-maskers and anti-vaxxers. So we're gonna be jumping way into there, talking about their threats, talking about what inevitably is coming of many of them. So a lot to get to. And eventually, hey, some positive news on unionization, going to a place that hasn't been previously. And we have been exposed over the weekend to something that makes LA traffic even worse. You didn't think it was possible, but we've found something. But with all of that said, Francesca, are you ready to jump into the news?
No.
No, nor should you be, because this first story is awful. It's really bad. So I want everyone to hold on to your news butts, because it's about to get real. Let's do this. Yesterday, the US military conducted a drone strike in Kabul, and they were very excited about the results, saying they had destroyed a vehicle that was packed with explosives, thus stopping ISIS-K from committing another attack against those waiting at the airport in Kabul. The issue was that whether that ends up being true or not, that's what they're saying. We do know some of who was killed in that strike, and it was not militants. Survivors and neighbors said that the strike had killed 10 people, including 7 children, an aid worker for an American charity organization, and a contractor with the US military. The dead were all from a single extended family and were getting out of a car in their modest driveway when the strike hit a nearby vehicle. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, we're gonna give you a few more details. Understand that there's a lot more detail out there. The New York Times has a great write-up of this where they talk to members of the family. This is like among the worst things I can imagine happening in a situation where I didn't think that much worse could occur. But anyway, the US Central Command is focusing on the fact that they say they destroyed this car bomb that posed an imminent threat. The command said in a statement it was aware of reports of civilian casualties, adding, "We would be deeply saddened by any potential loss of innocent life." They're talking about it in this like detached passive, hypothetical sense. News is talking to the families. They're talking about those who were like a family was riven, like destroyed by this strike. And they're talking about as well, you know, if I offended anybody, I apologize. That's what it feels like, Francesca.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as per usual with the United States, and when civilians are killed in drone strikes, they'll probably receive, you know, $500 a piece and move it along. And this is supposedly, you know, the most advanced form of warfare upon a population that, but and yet no one could wait or see. No one clearly had any eyes on the ground as to whether there was a family leaving their car just as they were about to drone strike a neighboring car. So you gotta wonder, I mean, and this happens all the time. You know, we just haven't been covering it, sadly, right? Because American media doesn't really care about civilian deaths in Afghanistan unless it's for retribution or related to Americans who've died. Let's just, you know, be honest about that fact, which is it's morbid and awful. And of course this was going to happen. So when I saw the story break that we had another drone strike, sure, we, you know, we got out the, that we took out the target for the, for, you know, the car full of bombs that could have harmed other people. And I was like, let's just be quiet right now because the other shoe is going to drop. I know this is not just a clean, it's never a precision strike aimed exactly where it needed to go. Drone strike gets exactly who it needed to get. No, there's always civilians or a wedding party.
Yeah, it's obvious. Like it should go without saying, like you can't drop missiles in a city willy-nilly and only get the people that you want.
Yep.
And or you can, because most US based people, even if they ever hear about this, and the vast majority never will think, oh, that's Afghanistan. I don't know what their lives are like. I don't know what their cities are like. Do they have driveways? Do they have cars? Wait, they have families there? We know so little, we care even less, that I guess you can afford to do this. And you can do it over and over again. Now look, I understand, so there's a comment in the audience saying, you know, so obviously you feel terrible for the family who died, but what if the bomb had been able to be exploded? First of all, should we take it as a given that they did destroy a car bomb? They're saying that they did. They're also saying that a few days earlier in a retaliatory strike elsewhere in Afghanistan killed senior members of ISIS-K. They're refusing to this day to even say who it was that was killed. Is it possible that they were members of ISIS? Sure. At this point, 20 years later, are we just taking like for granted that whatever the US Central Command tells us about their actions in Afghanistan are accurate, when they've had, you know, a really devastating couple of news cycles because of the loss of US soldiers? Are we just going to trust what they say? I don't see any reason why we would do that.
Yeah, and if you blow the whistle on it like Daniel Hale did in terms of the drone war and the number of civilians that have been killed in drone strikes, you know, the Espionage Act will be thrown at you and you'll be threatened with jail time and you will be unable to speak and you will have to go into hiding. I mean, you'll be arrested. This has been happening. And the other thing that's so interesting about this is that, you know, the media also wasn't covering Trump's role in expanding the drone war, right? The media loved to talk about Trump. Oh my God, they couldn't get enough of talking about Trump. But whenever it came to Trump in the Middle East, it was as if there were other more pressing problems where when civilians continued to die at the hands of American drone strikes, civilians continued to die at the hands of ISIS-K. And something that I covered in my podcast the other day was that, you know, Trump actually helped negotiate the release of ISIS-K fighters from prison, some of whom might have been the ones carrying out these attacks. So like, are we deliberately not putting together the Lego blocks here, people? Like, do we not want to finish the puzzle? You know, we're just seeing it and we're just like, I'm putting the Lego in my mouth instead of put it, you know, instead of make the, you know, like put the puzzle together. That's really what we're doing here. And so the last thing I'll say on this, not the last thing, but when is it enough for those who are asking, well, what are we supposed to do? Just, you know, let the car bomb go or whatever. Like, yeah, but when it comes to civilian life, when it comes to perpetuating war, we're using the same terrorist tactics. Yeah, we've got more money, but we're using the same terrorist tactics. We're killing civilians still. When does it end? When can we say enough is enough 20 years after 9/11? Maybe we should stop.
Exactly. Yeah. And we, you know, in a little bit, we're going to turn to Lindsey Graham talking about how they're going to want to strike us like they did in 9/11, even though it's a different group and all that. Like, he's just using the same metaphors. And if you were to ask him why, you would get some BS that you've heard a million stupid times over the last 20 years and nothing about. Well, first of all, like they're trying to get out. They're scared and you're bombing them. Now, repeat that thousands of times over many years. Now, that does not mean that everyone who's affected by this becomes a militant, but it's got to shift their view of the United States, of the Taliban, of other groups operating in Afghanistan. But I don't know, that's complex. You got to learn about stuff having to do with Afghanistan. Easier to just say they hate us for our freedoms. The idea that if we had no involvement whatsoever there, we were never there, we never bombed anyone, that they would just be like, you know, I heard there was this city, it's a Kansas City, in fact, and I hear they have a lot of freedom there, so I want to blow it up. Like, but there's millions of people that think that that's actually how things work. Anyway, I want to give a few more details about this so you really understand how terrible this is. This maybe final horrific tragic incident during our withdrawal from Afghanistan. One of the individuals who was killed, this is the aid worker, Zamari Ahmadi. His daughter, Samia, was inside when she was struck by the blast wave from the drone strike. At first, I thought it was the Taliban, but the Americans themselves did it. She said she staggered outside choking and saw the bodies of her siblings and relatives. I saw the whole scene. There were burnt pieces of flesh everywhere. And that is what we did. Her fiance died in the explosion. He had been elsewhere in Afghanistan and he traveled to Kabul. He was there in that house, hoping to get out on one of the American flights. And he was killed by us. Their family is never going to be the same. They lost a huge chunk of their entire family in this one attack. And this is one attack that in 48 hours, there'll be like 10 Americans that remember that it happened. But for them, they're not going to forget. They can't forget. Afghanistan is not going to forget. Anyway, there's other news. We shot down some rockets that were aimed at the airport, and technically the airport remains open for the next, you know, I don't know, 30 or so hours that were supposedly until the deadline, that is. About 1,200 people were airlifted out of Kabul in the last roughly 24 hours, which is obviously far fewer people than had been being withdrawn in the days prior. Now, whether this is because it's not like a hard deadline that we're getting out and they've been gradually withdrawing their forces and their planes and infrastructure, I don't know. Is it because of, as The Intercept reported, Ken Klippenstein was writing on this, they had requested that requests for visas be paused days ago, and maybe this is the product of that. I don't know, but they got a lot of people out, but far less are being removed now. And we're in the closing moments of it effectively, Francesca.
I mean, it is a crass judgment call for this president to make, right? After he is obviously sticking to his plan to withdraw Afghans and Americans and get out of Afghanistan and conducted one drone strike. Then there was word that there was going to be another, you know, attack, and made the executive decision essentially that these human lives, civilian lives, or not knowing whether there were civilian lives, was worth it. Sort of the cost benefit bloody analysis was made. And I would argue that that was a bad call. And I'm not in his position, but at a time like this, when there are a lot of eyes and there's a lot of media attention on what's happening in Afghanistan, why? And like, remember how bad your drone program actually is. Listen to the operators who are traumatized because they've either been ordered to fire when they couldn't see whether there were civilians, or they were ordered to fire when there were civilians. Like, listen, your technology isn't actually that good. Not everything is like a special, you know, SEAL Team 6 going in to get Osama bin Laden. You know, I wish it was. Because the only way to be precise is to actually have boots on the ground, right? if that's what you're trying to do. If yeah. not, you're going to kill civilians and it's gonna be a bad headline and it's gonna look bad on you. And people like us who are honestly supporting a lot of the president's moves in terms of really withdrawing and not bowing and caving to some of this right wing pressure are gonna criticize you for it, because you should be criticized when there's a loss yeah. of civilian and children's lives.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, it's the title of the stream. We'll be talking about Lindsey Graham and what he thinks should be done based on what's going on in Afghanistan. Then we'll give you an update on the tropical storm situation. But first, this. Okay, we're gonna jump right back in with just a little bit more on Afghanistan. Lindsey Graham, big friend of Joe Biden. He's talked about it before. Biden has talked about it before. It was one of the reasons we thought bipartisanship was possible, right? Well, I'm straining the definition of we there. But now he has something else he wants to happen to Biden, and that is impeachment. Why? Afghanistan, something he says. I think it's dereliction of duty to leave hundreds of Americans behind enemy lines, turn them into hostages, to abandon thousands of Afghans who fought honorably along our side, to create conditions for another 9/11 that are now through the roof. This is Joe Biden being Joe Biden. He's been this way for 40 years, but now he's the commander in chief. He's not a senator, he's not the vice president. These are commander in chief decisions. So he supports impeaching Joe Biden over this. Now, notably, Francesca, he did not want to impeach Donald Trump when he initiated the withdrawal that would have resulted in many people still being left behind. And of course, he, like many right wingers, doesn't want tons of people being brought over from Afghanistan, but leaving them is enough to be impeached. Notably, he didn't want Trump to be impeached for what happened with the Kurds, like abandoning. What does it mean? When does it matter? Well, it really seems like it depends on who's the president at the time. But what do you think about this? Obviously, they're not in charge right now, but this is something that maybe could come after 2022.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they will very much try to impeach this immoral president. Thank you. My paycheck is cleared. Weapons manufacturers. You know, they refurnished my entire remodel and I got a new downstairs bathroom. It's very nice. And that was the Lockheed. I call it the Lockheed bathroom because Lockheed Martin helped me redo that bathroom. But yeah, I was going to say impeachment 7 months into this presidency, no matter what. So it just happened yeah. to be on this day. This is the point, though. Like they're going to try and impeach him over anything. And let me just say, when it comes to presidential BDE, there is nothing like leaving a failed war that has killed and maimed and displaced far too many and wasted way too much American taxpayer money and saying, guess what? We're gone. We're leaving. Yeah. I'm finally looking at reality. And yeah, it's time to focus on nation building in the United States of America. That takes leadership. That is what a commander in chief does, knowing when to get the F out of a war. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be led into battle if you're going to lose.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even give that much credit, like knowing when to get out, but like, because that was a long time ago, like he could have been pushing Obama to, but
no, not
but
50, at least 20, the beginning, yes. Anyway.
Being willing to at the very least. Now, of course, many are not gonna like that. Lindsey Graham hides it, you know, not at all, whereas some of them hide it a little bit. Every single one of these Republicans and a lot of the Democrats are still gonna be happy to have hundreds and hundreds of bases, including in the region, and a never-ending air war and drone strikes and all that stuff. Because that's just straight money to Lockheed so he can expand his bathroom next time. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely the case. Like if you're watching this and you haven't been following American politics for a long time, or if you're from another country, you might say, wait, so do they just impeach the president all the time? Not really, historically, recently kind of, but you know, Obama was never impeached. George W. for all the damage he did was never impeached. But seriously, like, so the Democrats did impeach Donald Trump twice. And so you might say, if you have no ability to critically think whatsoever, well, they did it, now the Republicans get to. But I want you to think carefully about what it was that they impeached Trump for. Because there were a whole lot of things they could have, but what did they? Over trying to set up a scheme with a foreign power to defraud our election process, basically, with Ukraine, and then trying to overthrow the election after he lost it on January 6th. Those were very serious things. And so Lindsey Graham is just, you know, some soldiers died. Well, okay, that is bad. I think that's terrible. And I'm fine with us being more critical of presidents that you know are in charge when things like this happen. But if he's mad about the 13 US soldiers that died in the last week, was Lindsey Graham not bothered by the more than 60 that died in Afghanistan while Trump was president? And the far more that died in other countries, in Iraq and Syria and other places around the world? When do these casualties actually matter? Could you pretend that it's anything other than a purely partisan thing? He's not even bothering to pretend that. So I have no doubt that they will impeach on anything. Lindsey Graham will at least try to pretend that it's a policy thing. People like Marjorie Greene won't even do that. But if they get in charge, sure, they probably will try to impeach. Maybe they'll be successful. I don't know.
They're gonna impeach him over the Delta variant. I'm serious. Like you know, they you know, his approval ratings have gone down. Joe Biden's has maybe in large part because this whole vaccine rollout wasn't the silver bullet that we needed to stop the spread, and there wasn't really another plan beyond, you know, vaccinate and sort of cross your fingers. Well, now Americans aren't and refusing to get vaccinated, of course. So now what? But they're still gonna make the spread of the virus about Joe Biden. Mark my words, he will be impeached. But they're gonna be like, you know, we're on track to hit like something like 100,000 more dead by December 1st.
Supposedly
100,000 more dead by December 1st, insanity. They're gonna be like, oh, 730,000 people dead, that's all on Biden, all of it, right? And it's just gonna be this sort of ping ponging of like bodies of like, you know, it's disgusting, but they'll do it. They'll do it, even though they're encouraging people not to wear masks or to get vaccinated.
I know that weird inconsistency about caring about it and at the exact same time not caring about it is very weird. And that is going to come up quite a bit as we continue on our coverage. Want to give you an update on Tropical Storm Ida, which made landfall just yesterday, and we're experiencing the consequences of this now. It was downgraded from a hurricane to a tropical storm earlier today. It actually made landfall on August 29th, the same day Hurricane Katrina struck the area 16 years ago. And I think that, look, that is part of it. In addition, the data coming in about the storm as it got towards land is one of the reasons people were so concerned about this. And we're still very much in the early parts of this. It is possible that it will not be nearly as damaging, but we have at least one report of a person having died as a result of the storm. As of right now, supposedly 1 million people are without power in the region. And I know that in the news, you're supposed to talk about these storms as purely a spectacle, not tied to anything else happening in the world. But we're gonna break that pattern in a couple of different ways. So first of all, and we'll give you more information about this, including that it's it made landfall originally as a category 4 hurricane with winds of up to 140 miles per hour, a storm surge that could reach as high as 16 feet. Obviously very damaging, but Francesca, bear in mind, it's hitting an area that is in the grip of a pandemic. Louisiana was not doing well. Its hospitals were already stuffed with patients. And one of the scariest things I read in advance of landfall was they were abandoning plans to relocate people who had been hospitalized with COVID because all of the surrounding states also had full hospitals. They couldn't send them to Florida. They couldn't send them to Mississippi or to Texas. They were all slammed already. And so some will leave, some regular people will flee inland. Many of those people will have COVID when they do so, but they have to leave because of how worried they are about this storm. It is just, you know, I'm trying to avoid saying the perfect storm of a catastrophe that's coming, the intersection of the pandemic and this natural disaster.
Mm-hmm. Science finds a way, right? Whether it's the virus, or whether it is climate change, this is going to happen. I mean, and it is a region that, you know, has really been pummeled by hurricanes. I mean, it's funny that we talk about this like once in 100 year hurricane, on the same day that another hurricane of nearly equal magnitude struck 16 years ago. Well, so there's something that's not really working out there. Not a hundred, yeah. Once in 100 years. It's more like, and we know these are like used to be once in 100 years, now happening every 15 years. So I'm just, I mean, I have nothing but like these dark moments where I'm like, I do feel like a surge of thoughts and prayers, even though that is pointless. But I am thinking of all the people in the wake of this hurricane. As we know with Katrina, so many of the deaths and so much of the damage didn't happen until afterwards when the levees did break. And so now it appears that they're holding, but let's hope they continue to do so. And we will see. Of course, there's a lot more to say on the climate front.
Yeah, 100%. And we will get to that. In advance of the show going live, I was trying to find out the most up-to-date information about what was happening. It's difficult. I'm assuming that later on today we'll have a better idea of the damage, but we're going to be showing you some of it. We do know that although it had been downgraded, it is still going to be traveling, doing damage to multiple states in the area. The governor of Louisiana said there is no doubt that the coming days and weeks are going to be extremely difficult for our state, and many, many people are going to be tested in ways that we can only imagine today. And again, because of that combination of different issues. This is, in fact, the ninth named storm of the 2021 Atlantic season, the fourth storm to develop into a hurricane. Louisiana hospitals were about 68% full of state hospital beds, 84% of all ICU beds were filled. And we can see some of the infrastructure damage. If we jump to this next image, you're gonna see an entire building collapse in New Orleans. You can see the before and after of those pictures there. A major electrical tower collapse was also reported. That was one of the reasons that basically the entire region was out of power. God, and it's just, you can't, you know, as we go through the weekend, I start saving stories that we might want to talk about when Monday comes. And one thing that I came across, actually, Edwin, who works at TYT, had shared this. It was another bout of the fire tornadoes that were developing from the wildfires. And like we have that simultaneously, being devastated by tropical storms, literal fire tornadoes. It's difficult to even keep up with how much damage is being done. And as you alluded to, Francesca, these storms are becoming more common. It is not solar flares that are doing it. But despite the fact that we had this great opportunity to be reminded a few weeks ago of the IPCC climate change report, in the wake of that, there's been all these disasters that we've talked about. Meanwhile, and everything, the fires in the Mediterranean, the flooding in China, all of that. Only 13% of shows talking about these extreme weather events actually mention the connection to climate change. And that's in the wake of that report, which is only a couple of weeks old. You don't have an excuse at that point. They're supposed to be better anyway, but they were finally, remember all that? There's like the flashing red warning sign that we talked about. I guess it's easy to forget, I suppose.
You know, I think one thing that, you know, you don't even have to cover climate change or if it's real. You can ostensibly skip all that and just talk about climate preparedness, right? Just from a purely infrastructural level. Looks like we are negotiating an infrastructure bill that has a big piece on climate preparedness. But you know, the sad reality is some of the impact, a lot of the impact of climate change, it is too late to mitigate. We are going to face it. We are facing it right now. But what we can do is things like running power lines underground, right? Like that is something that is doable. It's something that, you know, this latest Dixie fire in California, which is, I believe is still raging, that it apparently was started by power lines that PG&E were told to bury. Like you should, these should not be above ground. They should be underground. You know, and same with, you know, if there are going to be stronger storms on the Gulf Coast, then that electrical grid needs to be, and electrical lines need to be underground, so they can't get knocked down and you know, save hundreds of lives by doing that. You know, and preparing for the worst. So we're beyond against the moral argument. It's happening. It's here now. What are we doing about it? What are we doing to mitigate it? What are we doing to prepare for it?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And related to that, we have a comment from Progressive Amo, says nothing will be noted about the fuel and other pollutants released to destroy the area as well. And that's something that, you know, Ken Klippenstein will have a story on probably. We do see that. And this is, you know, this is a coastal area. Like, you know, when you have refineries and you have chemical processing plants and stuff like that, we've seen that in Texas recently too. Those end up getting destroyed. You have explosions, you have pollutants leaking into the area. That was devastating. In Houston just a couple of years ago. And so it's possible to see that as well. And that's the thing too, like I wish I had more concrete information about the damage that had been done. We have these early reports of devastating damage. I don't know yet, but I'm sure, you know, as the week rolls on, we'll find out and it's gonna be devastating.
Yeah.
Okay, final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's important to mention like that we need a Green New Deal, guys. Like there, and look at Louisiana. You look no further. So much of the Louisiana economy is based on fossil fuels. It's not all giant corporations. It's often like small. It's majority giant corporations. We need a just transition away from fossil fuels. That ironically is killing the same Gulf Coast where so much of the oil is extracted from, right? Hello, like it is so obvious what we need to do. And hurricanes used to happen on the Gulf Coast. Of course, they've always happened. But with the amount of dredging, with the amount of the expansion of canals so that giant oil rigs can come through and dig up the earth, right? And dig up that oil, all of the land has been eroded and eaten into so that actually the oil and gas industry has helped some of the land erosion as well as the burning of the fossil fuels has created, you know, a sea level rise that's also eating into that Gulf Coast. So the point is that like before there was a much more of a flow system, like back, you know, you can rehabilitate deltas, you can rehabilitate places like the Gulf Coast. We can work toward that if we cut off the oil and gas industry, you know, at the knees. We have to do it. We cannot wait for peak oil to come around. It will kill us before we can actually rein it in. So yeah, we gotta do that now.
And if we can tie it to one more thing that's going on right now, Democrats have maybe one goal for the next year, which is the infrastructure bill. Maybe we should take climate change seriously. Like we're getting constant, we have this multi-month conversation about what should be in this reconciliation bill. Every 2 days we have another type of weather we've never heard of before, which should be inspiring us to take it seriously, to use this opportunity. We'll see if that actually happens. Anyway, we're gonna break in one moment because our next couple stories are thematically linked. I did wanna just say this, and I had forgotten, I meant to mention this on Friday, but I know sometimes we will cover a story and then there will be updates, and sometimes we do the updates, sometimes we don't, sometimes you don't notice it. So we had covered a story of a complete whack job whose car was stopped by a protest that was going on. I think it was called the Bikes Up, Guns Down. I apologize, I don't remember. It was about housing equity. And he wielded a gun against the black teenagers who were doing this protest. He claimed that he was only standing his ground. It was rejected as a defense. So I don't know if anyone watching this saw that. I'm shocked that it was rejected, but in any event, it was. So hey, small miracles. We'll see if he gets any actual consequences, but at the very least, that one mental horror was not allowed to stand. Anyway, with that, we're gonna take a break. We'll be back in just a few. Anyway, okay, before we jump back into the news, and it's gonna be some dark footage. So just again, warning for you. I did wanna let you know about a few things that are coming up. Including more content, obviously. This is not one of the things where I tell you the shows that are coming up, although that will come. I just want to let you know that we will still be doing this. And as always, if you can support the network in any way, we appreciate it. Simply being here, enjoying the shows, sharing the show is a great way to do that. But if you can give a little more, there are benefits to membership. You can find out about those at tyt.com/change. Membership was what allowed us last year to weather the pandemic, you know, in the way that we did. So if you want to be a part of this change, tyt.com/change is a good place to go. Now, in terms of what's coming up in programming, today's Monday, which means old school. And here is an old school crew for you: Ben Mankiewicz, Cenk Uygur, Dave Kohler. That is tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Time on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, and tyt.com. If you don't watch it live, that's fine. As a member, you can get access to not only this episode later, but also the archives. Old School is a ton of fun. Once every 3 years or so, they invite me on. I always enjoy it. And then they forget I exist for a while. Anyway, also coming up after our show is Indisputable. Dr. Rashad Ritchie will be taking over on Twitch and YouTube.com/IndisputableTYT with his co-host Dina Dahl. Jacob Rich will be on for a debate. Always fun. You don't want to miss it. But that said, why don't we jump back into it with this clip?
Week to stop the passport. Yes. 1 week. Tomorrow they vote. If it's unanimous, we lost. We lost. Sharpen your knives, get your guns, get your food. Yes. Now. Yes. Now.
That's right.
Now.
Yes.
Get your neighbors, get a stronghold. Yes. Find out who the men are and that make a plan.
Yes. Okay, so that was Jason Lefkowitz, a comedian,
anti-vaccine activist.
I thought it was funny. I thought it was pretty funny. Anyway, so this was at a rally in, I believe it was Santa Monica, so not far from where I'm shooting this actually. Jason, by the way, is known for wearing a yellow Star of David patch because he wants to get in on that horrible, horrible thing that people like Marjorie Greene were doing. Making Nazi salutes at businesses that have COVID-19 safety measures. And most recently, advising people to get both edged weapons and firearms ready in case some sort of mask mandate happens. Anyway, the reason we're playing this and that we're gonna play other footage is that there are an increasing number of crazies who understand that while just doing the grift online can be good, you can sell brain pills and bone marrow and stuff and make money that way. If you inspire people to violence, that gets people revved up more. And so the anti-maskers, the anti-vaxxers, we see them individually picking fights everywhere. They're also doing it at the rallies. They're telling other people, you need to be ready to die. You need to be ready to kill if they ask you to have a vaccine or whatever. Thoughts, Francesca? He's a comedian, so you have a lot to answer for.
No. It was very funny. It was the best open mic. Dude, we will do anything for a hot five. Like sets are few and far between. So I feel you. I should have gone up there. I'm surprised. I don't know who books that mic, but I would really like some time on it. I obviously, the guy's wearing this like no Kool-Aid shirt. Like he's like a Kool-Aid with a cross through it. These are obviously anti-vaxxers who are now taking horse paste and dewormer for livestock, saying that they shouldn't drink the Kool-Aid. Like, I don't, you know, I've said this before, but this is really, it's like, it feels like the civil rights movement for highly privileged people. They're like, is this our time? Do we do that? Am I oppressed? Is this oppression? Oh my God, I think I'm oppressed. Honey, I think I'm oppressed. Like that's really
Googling,
what, like,
how do I know if I'm being oppressed?
How do I know if I'm oppressed? Can I get scholarship for being told to wear mask in restaurant? You know, I don't know what to say at this point, but like what I didn't see were any police officers, right? What I don't see are people, you know, tracking these folks, making sure that they don't make good on their threats of violence, because we know they can and we know they will. And that has happened in places like Los Angeles around, you know, there is a gross nexus. There is a Venn diagram of all kinds of, whether it's white nationalists, Proud Boys, anti-vaxxers, anti-maskers, as well as anti-trans folks. And they have come out in force to threaten people. I wonder, right? I mean, these are all the breadcrumbs and the things that led to January 6th as well, you know. And if the FBI had actually been taking those threats seriously, which I don't know why they wouldn't, right? That January 6th might have been more preventable. Granted, whoever the guy who was in charge was going to make sure that there was going to be no security, no matter what. But these are not small incidents; they can mount up.
Yeah, and like the people at this rally, is that it? That's just, they went to this one rally and that's that. I don't know. We'll see. I guess stay tuned. Two things about the Kool-Aid. First of all, like I just love the arguments. Like they're drinking the Kool-Aid that the CDC is telling them. You can't trust that. You can only trust what some anonymous random person on 4chan tells you about horse paste. Mm-hmm. And also, imagery wise, I get you're against the Kool-Aid. So you put the Kool-Aid man with the Ghostbusters like thing or whatever. But like his whole thing is busting through things. He's gonna bust through your no sign. That's what he does. The imagery just isn't consistent. You need to think about these jokes. Anyway, I wanna take you to another individual. So here we have Steve Lynch, right-wing conspiracy theorist and Pennsylvania Republican Party's nominee to become the Northampton County Executive. Here is what he thinks is gonna need to happen.
We got parents looking at the bylaws. I plan on going in these school boards. Ian and other strong men. Men, where are you? Men, wake up, smell the coffee. Let's go, make men great again, right? Make men again, let's go. Men, I need you in the coming weeks, because when we walk into those school boards, we're gonna have everything we need to do to go in there with those 90 school boards that voted to put these masks back on the children with no scientific, it's done. Giving them the research and the data. Do you understand that? Forget going into these school boards and bringing data. You go into school boards to remove them. That's what you do. Forget. They don't follow the law. They don't follow the law. You go in and you remove them. I'm going in with 20 strong men. I'm going to speak in front of the school board and I'm going to give them an option. They can leave or they can be removed. And then after that, we're going to replace them with nine parents and we're going to vote down the mask mandates that evening. That evening, this is how you get stuff done. Forget writing your legislators. Forget it.
Yeah. Well, that was clear in a variety of ways. So one is, they're not following the law. There's no point. There's no point. Don't write your legislators. It's just more and more out there, Francesca. We're done with politics. We're done with all of this. We're gonna grab 20 strong men. We're going to get rid of the school boards. And we're just gonna put 9 people we like there. This is just like, you know, make whatever historical comparison you want. This is just thugs in the street saying, we don't do politics anymore. We're not part of that civil society stuff. If elections don't produce the outcomes we want, get your knives ready, get your guns ready, get your 20 strong men who've smelled the coffee ready, and just take over. Just do whatever you want. And they have crowds that are cheering for them. Having a couple of psychos in Santa Monica, or I think that was in North Carolina, perhaps it might have been Virginia.
Pennsylvania.
Is bad. Oh, it's Pennsylvania. Yeah, it's in Pennsylvania. Well, I don't know, they travel. But anyway, yes, Pennsylvania. That's bad enough, I suppose. But having crowds that are like, yes, tell me about how we should be done with all this and we should just start removing the people we don't like.
Yeah. Men, make men great again. You know, the phrase toxic masculinity is far overused, but if you look it up in a dictionary, you see my dude right there screaming about making men great again. Since when did the virus have anything to do with your masculinity? Except when it comes to erectile dysfunction, bro, because guess what? Long COVID and COVID sufferers, they got some ED, okay? There have been COVID, so this is real, COVID-19 cells found in the member. So, you know, let's talk about that. You want to talk about, you want to link this to masculinity. Let's talk about how you can't get it up and maybe that's why you're here. Okay, I'm done with that line of thought. Here's my thing. Another line of thought is, how about this one? Try this one on. No, this is a minority of people, right? I think more and more, especially as folks like this guy, AM conservative radio hosts, anti-maskers are dying, are proving that the kinds of misinformation that they spread helped lead to their very own death. I hope and I believe that this will be a smaller and smaller number of people and they will have less and less influence. And I think it's important for us to, it's easy to look at these folks and get very, very scared. I am scared. Yeah. I do think they need to take them seriously. But I also think it's important that to remember that there are people who are turning away from some of these false leaders and they can be sort of picked off, so to speak. And that it is important to talk to anyone who's an anti-mask or anti-vaxxer, who you know, who's in your family, who you do care about. And there is a way to get into that and to de-radicalize, so to speak, those folks. I just think it's really funny though, that the people who are like everyone, these folks are just living their own walking dead. Like they're, it's like everyone's gonna maybe like in 5 years, like be back to normal. And then they'll be like the walking dead crew. That's just like, you know, like, no, we gotta get our men, rah, you know, and like, and we're just like, calm down, you know? At least that's what I hope.
We only have a few minutes left for this hour, so we're gonna switch things up to finish out this hour, and then we will return to the insane anti-mask, anti-vax stuff. So let's jump into this next story. It's a big year for unionization efforts at companies that have been incredibly opposed to them historically. Now coming to a Starbucks near you with 50 Starbucks workers in New York trying to form a union, which would be the first at Starbucks. Obviously, it's a major change in the US. You can see here they have their organizing committee letter that was sent to Starbucks. So we want to give you some details about why they feel they needed to unionize and what they are likely to face. The Guardian, by the way, has done great work on summarizing their demands and all that. Alexis Rizzo is one of the founding members of the organizing committee. She's worked at Starbucks for 6 years since she was just 17. She says that it's an effort to improve a workplace she enjoys working in. She wants it to be better for the workers and for the employees, but enjoys Starbucks. She says, we've been called Starbucks partners and we want to become real partners, to be able to have a voice to make our job better and to make our customers' experience better. She and other workers have emphasized that Starbucks has a problem of chronic understaffing, lack of seniority pay, and communications problems between workers and corporate as some of the issues workers seek to resolve through organizing a union. There's another employee who's been working at Starbucks for just 1 month, but said understaffing has been a major problem, saying we end up with customers waiting in line for half an hour to an hour for their drinks, which is not acceptable and I would not do it. But what you should know is that Starbucks does have a history of opposing union organizing efforts, including earlier this month. An administrative law judge ruled that Starbucks had illegally fired two workers in Philadelphia in retaliation for union organizing. And the former CEO Howard Schultz lobbied Congress against labor law reforms while at the helm of Starbucks, aggressively fended off unionization campaigns stores in previous years. And so obviously because of this, they're saying right now as they're doing this organizing that they want Starbucks to engage with them in a serious legal way. Good luck with that. What do you think?
Howard Schultz, the venti douchebag of politicians slash oligarchs. Yeah, good on Starbucks employees. I was recently in a Starbucks. I don't go often, but when you're on a little road trip, there's nothing around and you gotta pee. So, and you know, you get your like whatever it is, your cold brew, creamy cold brew, very good. And there was a sign. And it said, we're looking for partners. Like we're looking for, you know, employees. We're looking for people to work for us. And you get a free subscription to Spotify. That's just one of the many perks for working at Starbucks. That is cruel. I'm sorry. That is a BS perk. That is cruel. That's a slap in the face. Starbucks employees want to unionize. They want respect. They want to be able to know what their hours are going to be. They want to know that they're not going to be yelled at by customers because they're not understaffed. And by the way, they're telling people to wear their masks constantly. They're putting themselves at risk by even going in a pandemic, right? And so, yeah, Starbucks tries to be the progressive corporation. It's like, oh yeah, $15 an hour, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Or I believe 12 to, you know, it's on the upper echelons of the minimum wage in a lot of states. So then unionize, bro. What are you afraid of?
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, this is a reminder that while obviously wages and other forms of financial compensation can be a big part of why some people want to unionize, it is hardly the only reason. Things like the fact that there's chronic understaffing, making the job more difficult, making the experience for customers worse. That's not strictly speaking a compensation thing, but it's a workplace, like mental health and safety and all that thing. Like these are the sorts of things that unions can be necessary for. We focus on wages, I think rightfully so, because so many American workers are underpaid, but that is just the beginning. Now that said, a spokesperson for Starbucks says, while Starbucks respects the free choice of our partners, we firmly believe that our work environment coupled with our outstanding compensation and benefits makes unions unnecessary at Starbucks. We respect our partners' right to organize, but believe that they would not find it necessary given our pro partner environment. Well, they seem to disagree. Anyway, we are out of time. We're out of time. Yeah. Anyway, thank you for watching if you're on the linear platforms. But if I don't know how much. Anyway, if you're watching on Twitch or on YouTube, we do have more news coming up. So don't go anywhere. We're gonna take a quick break for a couple of minutes. We'll be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.